Welcome to episode 154 of the Nerdfest podcast. This week's nerds are...
That was not offside.
As you can tell, John is paying a lot of attention to this.
Welcome to a sign of things to come.
But what if there is no tomorrow? There wasn't one today.
Fascinating.
Get away from her, you bitch!
Hi, Bruce.
I'm Batman.
Do or do not. There is no tomorrow.
Welcome to episode 154 of the Nerdfest podcast. This week's nerds are...
John Farthing,
Peter Johnson,
Andy Chandler,
and I'm Hazel Chandler. On today's show, we are recommending the movies and TV shows that have caught our attention recently, including Three Body Problem, X-Men 97, Ripley, and because after nearly 7 years of podcasting, John still doesn't understand what a recommendation is, Ghostbusters A Fallen Empire. So let's start the show.
Ripley the dog looked up when you said Ripley there.
He's a good dog.
I assume you're reviewing the TV show, not my dog.
Yes.
I can do both.
Yeah. Speaking of TV shows, John is giving the podcast his full attention for the next couple of minutes.
Yes, we've got 5 minutes and 15 seconds of the Leeds-Blackburn game, and Leeds are currently losing and screwing up their chances of automatic promotion.
So if you hear crying...
Football's great, isn't it, guys?
The hopes of the nerds are with you.
I'm going to see Godzilla Kong after this. I'm just setting myself up for a day of disappointment.
Oh, but not everything we've seen has been disappointing.
Just most of it.
Uplifting show, guys.
Fallout, that's where I was going.
Oh, yeah, the nuclear apocalypse show.
But it's a good nuclear apocalypse show, and that's what matters.
Yeah, we've only watched the first episode, and I will admit to being a bottle of wine deep.
Yeah.
Each.
I watched the first episode having gone out all night with my friend and fell asleep halfway through. So I've seen the first half of the first episode.
In fairness, that's not really a judgment on the programme. No. It's more to do with your TV watching habits.
There's more judgment on the 4 pints of beer I had before I started watching it.
The reviews say that the series actually picks up after the first episode. And I thought the first episode was pretty good.
Yeah.
So I really like the main character, Lucy McLean.
Yeah.
It's Gennaro.
Yeah. She's quirky. She's strong-willed. She's strong.
She's violent.
She's violent.
Always helps.
Yeah. And she doesn't have much time for fuckboys, which is nice.
The wedding doesn't go well.
No. I mean, I could see it coming. Like, I looked at the groom's face and I was like, you're going to eat her or something.
You're going to eat her?
Well, I don't know.
I guess it's a wedding night.
Words pop into your head, you say them, and you can't take them back.
Hazel and I are unfamiliar with the game. I know that it's a game. I know it's a post-apocalyptic thing. My brother, Chris. Hi, Chris. He likes the game. He listens to the podcast as well. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
And he's been looking forward to it. Yeah, with no familiarity with the game, I thought it was quite heavy, the first episode, on introducing and setting up the world. The storytelling was maybe a little bit lacking, but that'll pick up, and I like the style of it, and I quite enjoyed it.
Visual style, I thought, was really good.
Yeah.
And there were lots of references through to the game.
I assumed there would be.
Is it a series of games?
Yes. Yeah.
So is this the first game that a series is...
No, this is an original story set in the world of the game.
Oh, okay.
So I think it's set after the most recent game, which I think is Fallout 4.
So do you know the characters?
Weirdly enough, I have the game, but I've never played it. I think it must have been on, like, you know, those PlayStation Plus things where they'll give you a couple of free games every month. But from what I've seen, sort of the imagery looks very, very, very much like the games.
Yeah. I've only played one, which might have been one of the early ones. But I thought it was really well done. I liked the look of it all, the big mech characters. Mm-hmm. I like the way that they have humans toddling along behind them, almost like squires. I think that's quite nice, like a medieval knight.
Yeah.
So it starts showing the before the nuclear war apocalypse thing. So that was kind of set around now times, but everyone looked like they were from the 60s, but there are also robots walking around.
Yeah, it's just a sort of retro feel through a lot of the visuals of it.
Okay.
And then it jumps 214 years to later.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's a really, really promising start. I'm looking forward to watching more.
It's the guys who did Westworld.
Oh, no.
So it's going to get complicated.
Joy and Christopher Nolan's brother, Jonathan.
Yep.
Who wrote Memento and things like that. So he's got good stuff and several of the Batman movies.
Yeah. I think he might have co-written Inception as well.
And The Dark Knight.
Two of those are really good.
Which one don't you like?
The Dark Knight Rises isn't amazing. It's got lots of good things in it, but it's
That's
not.
That's the last one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Bane! Even darkness is your ally! Sorry, I can't help myself.
I laughed so hard when Mad Max Fury Road started and they had his face covered in stuff so he still couldn't speak clearly.
Yep.
It's like a, it's the a trait, biggest in joke. Yeah. Yeah. Furiosa's very soon, isn't it?
It's pronounced Furiosa.
Furiosa.
Oh no, John, what happened?
Should have had a penalty twice. The referee hates us. Football can get in the bin.
All the bingo phrases.
Maybe they should work at being more likeable then.
Maybe. Maybe we just said something, please can we have a penalty?
Yeah, is that out in May, Furiosa?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's not long at all. But I mean, if it's anything like Fury Road, I'm all for it.
Yeah, they showed about 20 minutes of footage at a recent con and apparently everyone lost their tiny minds. Which is normally the case with these things.
Yeah.
Get a bit of hype there. But yeah, I'm looking very much looking forward to it.
Yeah,
I'm definitely going to miss Charlize Theron because, you know, she's not in it.
Anya Taylor-Joy is very good.
You're right there, John.
I am. I think they might have just given our manager a card, which I'm very confused about.
Is it his birthday?
It's a birthday card.
Oh, no, it was I don't know what's happening.
If you had to pick two teams from movies to face each other in a football match, who would you choose?
Oh, so like a...
like an Avengers Assemble versus the Justice League type thing.
Suicide Squad versus the Gremlins. That's done, we lost. That's stupid football.
John is now sitting here in the sulk.
But now, like when Leeds do inevitably earn promotion, they'll have done it the hard way. They'll have earned it. And it'll be more rewarding.
Be a comeback story.
Should we do some recommendations? Well, shall we go over to the show that's got the internet talking? And that is, Andy, what have you got for us?
Oh, well, I wasn't sure what to recommend this week, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I had a tooth infection last week, and I'm not recommending that.
Who's but, in it?
Well, I wasn't recommending that, but codeine is pretty good. We went to see Hamilton in Edinburgh. I don't think we've talked about that on the podcast, have we? Good. Hamilton. Go watch it. But yeah, I've settled on X-Men 97 then, which is the new Marvel animated TV show thing on Disney Plus. 10 episodes in total. 5 have been released at time of recording. Episode 5 is a doozy. Very, very good. They're 30 to 40 minutes long each. And it's called X-Men 97 because it is a direct continuation of the old cartoon series from the 90s that ran from 92 to 97. It's animated in the same style. It looks really, really similar. They've kept the amazing theme tune. And it's a very similar show, but I feel it may be a bit more grown up in a really good way.
So did you watch the original?
I did, yeah. I liked it a lot. It was on Fox Kids, if I recall. And it was, yeah, geared towards children. And this one will get a lot of value for kids. But I think the themes it plays with and some of the dark places it goes to, it's more adult-oriented, but in kind of a mature way, not in a Deadpool swearing and extreme violence, haha, adolescent way. So X-Men are back. You know the deal with the X-Men. So they're a team of mutant superheroes who fight to protect a world that hates and fears them. Storyline-wise, picks up from the end of series, I think, 5 of the original show. The conclusion there was that the team leader, mentor, and father figure, Charles Xavier, dies. Whoops. And yeah, what can you do? That's Patrick Stewart from the films, by the way.
James McAvoy.
Patrick Stewart from the films. I like McAvoy. Yeah, so they're trying to pick up the pieces and find out a way to go on in the absence of Big Daddy Charles. Then things happen. The first episode is the most similar to the old ones, and just in tone, in terms of the balance of action and such. But then there's a big storyline twist at the end of it, which then all the subsequent episodes just feel like they're going into deeper, richer territory. And it explores themes of politics and relationships and morality and duty and all sorts. It's still bright, colourful. There's fighting robots and there's lasers and there's aliens and so on, superpowers and people flying around and there's humour and so on. But the themes it's exploring are really, really interesting. The kind of thing that you don't see that much in superheroes. The X-Men are amazing. I've always been a big fan of theirs. They are the best comic book property, to my mind. And they've always been useful for kind of exploring bigotry. They've been a vehicle for exploring sexism, racism, homophobia, things like that. And then being a big team, a big family of superheroes, you've got great diversity in the team, lots of different individual characters who are all very well drawn. Everyone has their favorite, which is a great aspect of it. The best X-Man objectively is Gambit. I will hear no argument on the subject.
This is the guy that throws playing cards.
That's correct, yes. We all wish we could throw playing cards. Really cool.
Paul Daniels in spandex.
Pretty much, yeah. Just more hair.
Oh, that's not a nice image.
That's tragic.
What was I getting at? Something about X-Men.
So is it going to appeal mainly to fans of the original series?
I think nostalgia is a big driving force behind that, and that's a big part of what I've enjoyed about it. But it is proper quality. I think it will appeal to a broad church. Kids will like it for the bright colours, and there's plenty of swooshy action and robots blowing up and so on. Adults will enjoy it as well because, as I say, it's really, really story-driven, really character-driven, more so than you'd expect from something like this.
The original took a lot of storylines like straight from the comics and dealt with them in a longer period.
I think this is doing the same thing. Yeah, it's far deeper, far richer, far more interesting than you expect something like this to be. Maybe that's showing my innate prejudice against cartoons, animation, sorry. It's, yeah, a very fun, but really interesting dynamic, lots of different story threads and lots there to enjoy. And if you don't enjoy one story or one character, then the next one will grab you. It's definitely worth anyone's time if you like superheroes, even if you don't.
Did you see the Kevin Smith Masters of the Universe thing on Netflix? Masters of the Universe Revelations, I think it was called.
New.
That was basically a direct follow-on from the Masters of the Universe 80s cartoon.
Right.
Aimed at an adult audience, but not in a Deadpool-y type way, but aimed at people that watched the original as kids. And it had the same character design, the same general exact continuation, but characters died in it and characters had meaningful relationships and things like that. So kind of the more mature take on a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah, it's exactly that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Are all the casts different? Because it's 20 years later.
This is something I didn't look into because I'm not diligent enough to prepare properly.
It is a mix. Yeah, it's about 3/4 of the original cast and then a few new people. So I think it's a different Gambit. And I think there's a few people, oddly enough, playing different characters in this one to they did in the original, but they've got as much of the voice cast back as they could. Kevin Feige said, we'll do it on two conditions. One, we get the original cast back, and two, we get the theme music. Which, for anybody of a certain age, that theme music is pretty iconic.
Which was a thing that came up last week as well, when Jet was saying that it was really good to hear that they'd reused the Gladiators theme from the original thing. And certainly, that's the thing that goes round and round in your head when you've watched it again, isn't it? I had Gladiators going through my head for about the last 3 weeks.
All of the music that they've got to all of the games is absolutely perfect. It's like Hang Tough, which is a game of aerial chess, and it's da-da-da-da. It's just perfect. The Eliminator gets your emotions going. Like, honestly, just full props to people who have scored those things. It's amazing.
So how many how many X-Men out of 10?
John, you're an improviser.
How many years late?
How many 9s out of 7?
8. I'm going to give it 8 out of 10 for now.
How many cards that Gambit throws in people's faces out of 10? Yeah.
Thank you. 8 cards out of 10 at present. But if it continues on in the final 5 episodes in the way it's been going, it could be a 9 by the end. It's already been renewed for a second season as well, which is lovely.
With the expansion of TV over the last couple of years, this is the sort of thing you want them to try out and find some of it will work, some of it won't work, but
yeah,
it's great that they do try.
You know what I think Marvel need to do a little bit of at the moment is scale shit back a bit and have some stuff that just stands on its own. Don't make everything I know their success has really been rooted in this everything integrated in one universe and lots of crossover and so on, but fuck's sake, just do X-Men that's just on its own.
Yeah, I mean, it's not about to happen with Deadpool and Wolverine, but yeah.
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 Yeah. What can you do?
And apparently they showed the first 10 minutes of Deadpool Wolverine at a Comic-Con the other day, and it's very multiversey.
Dan Watkins will be thrilled.
All right, so you know how all of the best things are called Ripley. There is Ripley, the adorable crazy canine. There's ultimate feminist movie heroine Ellen Ripley. And then there's Tom Ripley, a weird con artist obsessed with stealing other people's identities. Two out of three ain't bad.
Ever so often, when I say my dog's called Ripley, most people go aliens. Ever so often, somebody goes the sexual ambiguous serial killer. Yes.
Yes. So yeah, Ripley is on Netflix, the serial killer. It's the first serialized version, actually, of the novel by Patricia Highsmith, The Talented Mr. Ripley. It stars Andrew Scott as the titular character played by Matt Damon in the 1999 film, Johnny Flynn as wealthy fuckboy Dickie Greenleaf.
Is that the word of the day?
Fuckboy.
Episode title.
He was played by Jude Law, and Dakota Fanning as Marge, who was played by Gwyneth Paltrow. It is created and directed by Steven Zaillian, who is the screenwriter of Schindler's List and The Irishman. The premise is that it is the 1960s, and Dickie Greenleaf has been living off his trust fund in Italy for a few years, painting the odd nude and landscape here and there. Back in New York, Dickie's father comes across Tom Ripley, who's been making his living impersonating accountants for doctors and telling their patients that their check never arrived and they have to send a new one directly to him. Dickie's father asks Tom to travel to Italy on his dime and persuade his son to come home. With the cops on his tail and the promise of a sun field trip to the Amalfi Coast, Tom gratefully accepts. When he meets Dickie, he becomes rather obsessed with him, with his presence, his possessions, and his lifestyle. Girlfriend Marge is immediately suspicious, though, for very, very good reason. The series is shot in black and white, which really helps you think that this is a 1960s noir Hitchcockian style thriller. It might seem like it's a bit of a crime to hide all the exotic colours of the incredible Italian coastline, but it looks a different kind of beautiful, and it gives the show a very severe look. Andrew Scott is a big shock, incredible. Tom Ripley is he's a very fascinating character because he does some horrendous things. He's a really slimy character. He takes on some very odd obsessions, but you kind of still have to like him just a little bit to follow him on his journey. And Andrew Scott absolutely nails that. I don't know how. Johnny Flynn as Dickie Greenleaf, he's fine. He doesn't really have the charm of Jude Law, but, you know, he does. He's a bit of a different character to that portrayal. That was quite extroverted in the Anthony Minghella version. Here he's a bit more subdued. There's a little bit more going on under the surface, not much more. Dakota Fanning is excellent. She's more shrewd than Gwyneth Paltrow.
Shock horror.
Character. It's a slow burner. That really suits the tone. It might put some people off. But when key events happen, you cannot take your eyes off the screen. Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. There's 8 episodes altogether. I have seen 3 of them, so not fully through the story yet, but I am really enjoying it so far. I think it's really good.
Yeah, I second that. I'm really enjoying it as well. The monochrome photography is beautiful. I love that. And as you say, Andrew Scott is excellent. It's a fairly understated performance. It's not a very big, boisterous one, but he has this air of menace and threat about him in a kind of almost ambiguous and undefinable way. There's just, something just really kind of creepy and icy about him.
Two of the lead actors say more with their eyes than they do with the words in the script. Mm. Andrew Scott is one, Dakota Fanning is the other.
Mm.
She is so suspicious, but she's kind of got to maintain a sense of normalcy. I sense we're going to see her character try and find the bottom of the mystery as we go on. But really, really good acting.
Is there any bit where Dakota Fanning talks about her mother dying in the Amazon whilst researching spiders?
This is a Madame Web joke.
Yes.
Okay. Was she in Madame Web?
Wasn't she the lead in Madame Web?
Dakota Johnson.
Dakota Johnson.
Ah, different Dakota.
North Dakota and South Dakota.
Yeah. So I've never seen the original. I've learned something today.
Have you?
I've learned. I always have thought that Jude Law played Ripley and Matt Damon was the other one.
No.
Yeah, I've never seen the film for some reason. Is it a shameful gap or...?
No, I mean, I've seen it quite a few times. I think it's a really, really good film. This is a wholly different take on it, even though the plot is similar. Not exactly the same, but similar. I'll be interesting to see those two actors play it the other way around, but I think they got the casting absolutely spot on with that one. That's made me think. I wonder how it would be. It wouldn't work the other way around. No, it wouldn't.
Nowadays, I assume anything shot to be in black and white will actually be shot on colour cameras, and then they just put it through a process to make it look more noir-ish.
I don't know how it was done.
Werewolf by Night, they obviously must have made as a colour thing, and then they just switched the filter off and put a different version out with the colour afterwards. I assume they won't be doing that with this.
I can't see why you would bother.
From Dickie Greyleaf back into Dickie Greenleaf.
They won't be doing that. It is very Hitchcockian. I think it probably reminds me a little bit of Psycho, a little bit of Strange on a Train.
All right. The previous one was much sort of flatter in terms of the visual image of everything. It wasn't done quite so suspensefully. The noirish thing tends to be more wide-angle lenses.
I think there's a bit of that. Whenever Tom Ripley is doing something suspicious, he's right in the centre of the screen, and it's like the background is wider. You just see all of his slimy intentions written on his face, and it's like, you know, don't do that. Oh, he's done. Okay.
I'm glad he's getting good notices for it, because I thought it was really, really overlooked in the awards last year for All of Us Strangers, which I thought was the best performance of the year, and to not even get nominated for a lot of things, I just couldn't understand.
You and many other people, and I think a lot of the voters probably are kicking themselves. Well, hopefully they are. If not, you should be. He definitely deserves an Oscar, and I don't think it'll be too long before we see him cradling the golden statue. But
a euphemism.
It sounds like one, isn't it?
No judgment.
Don't bother Andrew Scott. He's busy cradling the golden statue, if you know what I mean.
Hey, if you can, why not?
He is great, though. Tom Ripley as a character is really compelling. He's not a nice man.
No, he doesn't play him nice.
And from the beginning, he's clearly a piece of shit, but there is something compelling about him.
I don't think it's because he's Andrew Scott, and I really like him as an actor, although that I'm sure that subconsciously that's part of it. It's definitely something that he's doing that he's making me go, I kind of almost want you to succeed here. Let's not look into that too deeply.
Fair enough.
So how many elaborate Italian scams out of 10?
How many completely uneventful boat trips out of 10?
Yes. I'm going to go for an 8 at the moment.
Yeah, I'm there with you.
There's a lot I need to catch up on. Something I'm like 2 or 3 episodes in on, and then I've just kind of, the next thing has come on. So I need to have a proper binge watch weekend and catch up on all these things.
You have stopped going to gigs then.
Nah, never.
All right, Peter, what have you got?
I have something we mentioned last time, which is three-body problem.
You should see a doctor by now. It's been 2 weeks.
Yes, it's clearing up eventually. This is a new Netflix show from David Benioff and D.B. Weiss. Weiss? Anyone know?
Yes, it's one of those.
Who adapted and showran Game of Thrones. This time it's based on a trilogy of sci-fi novels by Chinese author Liu Cixin that was a big hit in China, with notable Western fans including Barack Obama, who called it one of his favourite books. The book trilogy covers a fictional past, present and future where Earth encounters an alien civilization for the first time. In the first novel we discover there's something out there, but they're some way away. What will we all do until they get here? Much of it has been relocated from China, but it does retain some things the current Chinese government isn't too happy about, like the brutality of their cultural revolution in the 60s, where artists and scientists were brutally beaten in public struggle sessions. Watching this is a formative event for one of the characters, who works at a SETI site in China.
A SETI site? Works for Sofa Workshop.
She does, yes. Physics experiments have stopped making sense. Strange futuristic game headsets have appeared, inviting people to play. And one of the characters starts seeing a countdown timer in front of their eyes.
Countdown to what?
Ah, well.
Spoiler.
Oh, does it go?
Yeah, definitely. The series is really good. It's not the usual post-apocalyptic or alien invasion stories we've seen so often. It may deal with serious questions, but the script and cast breathe life and bring lightness to the story. Liam Cunningham from Game of Thrones is fantastic as Thomas Wade, leader of an intelligence organisation fighting to tackle the threat. And Benedict Wong from Doctor Strange is fun as a British investigator. I'd love to see these actors in more things. I just love watching them on screen. They're both brilliant. Other familiar faces are Jonathan Pryce, Rosalind Chow, who's Keiko from Star Trek TNG, and John Bradley, who's Samuel Tarly in Game
it's
of Thrones.
It's quite a Game of Thrones cast. Jonathan Pryce is in Game of Thrones as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I think
played
so.
Played the weird vicar, the shame guy.
Yeah. And one of the weird ones, Adrian Edmondson, who pops up in a rare straight role. He's very good, actually, isn't it? I've been really enjoying it. I only have one episode left to watch, and I really hope it sticks the landing. Been really well received so far, and I hope the other two books get adapted too. I'm fairly sure they will from the reception it's been getting so far. John, I know you've seen all of them, I think.
I've seen all of them. I won't spoil the ending for you. I've not read the books, but it's a bit of a mishmash. So I think the Liam Cunningham character doesn't appear until the third book.
He's definitely in the third book. I don't know which of the other ones.
I think it's not just a straight adaptation of the first book. I think they've taken elements from book two and three and spliced it together. And also they moved it from China to London, so they've moved quite a lot. I really, really enjoyed it. I wasn't sure where it was going about episode three or four.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it gets more interesting as you get the answers. There's some really good set pieces. There's a set piece on a boat, which is one of the most unusual things I think I've seen on TV, which is really, really good. It stays focused. It moves at a real clip, which I think is something they learned maybe from Game of Thrones, which had some pacing issues.
That to put in mind.
They also say adapting a thing that was actually finished was the big thing. Yeah. And they would never do that again.
So I really enjoyed it. Nice to see Keiko from Star Trek. We were delighted to see her appear. I have a little bit of a problem with the ending, but I can't really talk about that.
Right, no.
Is there only two bodies rather than three? Is that the problem?
There's 14 bodies. it's very expansive very quickly. Yeah, all the acting's great in it. I said it's just nice to have something that's about ideas and philosophy and rather than just action set pieces.
That's what sci-fi should be at its core, is an exploration of who we are, really, through an interesting premise and taking it to a conclusion to reveal something about humanity today. Rather than, you know, lasers and shit.
Or just having everyone running around an apocalyptic landscape, which seems to be so much sci-fi is going.
I enjoyed Fallout.
So whether it's going to get a season two or not, I don't know. I mean, they're planning a season two. The writers say they've got a three or four season arc for the entire story. But it's kind of not had a massive cultural impact, and it's hideously expensive to make, something like $20 million an episode.
Yeah, that's true.
So they paid $160 million for 8 episodes. And it didn't get to number one in the Netflix charts. I think it popped in at number two and then dropped a little
Although
bit.
Although they control the charts anyway. They get to choose what's where.
They were responsible for the Sex Pistols not getting to number one in 1977.
It counts for how quickly people get through the series as well.
I think the rule of thumb roughly is it's got to have an X number of viewers to begin with.
Yeah.
But then it's got to have a 50% completion rate within a month of it going up.
Yeah.
It seems to be the metric they use.
Algorithms.
Do I understand that one element of the story is there are far off aliens that discover Earth and say, oh, we're coming there to take your planet or something like that?
Kind of,
How does it deal with the fact that in 400 years' time, the aliens will arrive and find an uninhabitable dust bowl as a result of climate change?
No, it does deal with that.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
You'll be pleased to know.
Does it?
Yeah.
Only in the last episode?
No.
Have I missed something here?
Well, the entire overarching plot of the first half where all the scientists are killing themselves and...
Yeah, that doesn't result necessarily in the death of the Earth.
Right, I'm sure that Peter and John have watched different shows. One of them has watched Three Body Problem, and another one has watched a porn parody. And I don't know who.
I know who.
There's three bodies, so many problems. So many holes, which do we chew as? I've got three bodies, I wish I had two.
Jesus H. Christ.
So how complicated is it? Is it easy enough to follow along?
That'd be too complicated for Peter, clearly.
Well, evidently.
But they deal with, in an interesting way, the fact that it will take them 400 years to get there.
Mm, yeah.
Which is, I'm not sure, a premise that I've seen before. I mean, it must have been done. I know, like, Foundation deals with, like, generational things and stuff like that.
It's really good, though. You definitely should both watch it if you've not succumbed yet.
Well, we haven't finished watching old series of Gladiators on YouTube yet. At some point.
How many years of Gladiators have you got to watch?
Two.
Yeah, and then we start again.
Yeah.
But once we've watched the entirety of it 4 or 5 times, then it might be time for a three-body problem.
But yeah, you started Fallout.
Well, yeah.
We were drunk.
Right. We were rather, yeah. So how many bodies out of three would you give it?
I would give it 9. Yeah, definitely.
I would give it 8.
Yeah, okay. Harsh.
I've seen the whole thing.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, the that last episode is just not what you would want to see on TV. I'm surprised that it was allowed.
Oh, my. This sounds drastic.
Yeah. I mean, most of it was animated.
Yeah, John definitely watched the porn parody. All right, John, inflict us with your recommendation.
Do-do-do-do-do-do.
You can't see the air quotes here, which has a lot to do, that. Do.
Always doing the theme.
Yes.
Isn't he doing Deliverance?
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. I mean, I'd rather live through Deliverance than...
Oh, God.
Yeah, so Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Either the 4th or the 5th Ghostbusters, depending on whether you count the 2016 one, which isn't within the same timeline. It's a direct follow-on to the last one that I can't even remember the name of, Afterlife.
Yes.
We pick up a couple of years after the end of Afterlife, which concluded in, I think, a post-credit scene with Winston buying the firehouse that was the Ghostbusters home in the original. The Spengler family, together with Paul Rudd, who became enamoured with Mrs. Spengler in the last film, have moved to New York, where they are all working as Ghostbusters.
What's the hourly rate of a Ghostbuster?
£4.50.
That's below minimum wage.
Below minimum, yeah. I mean, well, actually, it's slave labour, because the daughter, being under the age of 16, he is illegally working for the Ghostbusters and isn't getting paid, which Walter Peck, in one of many, many cameos from the original film, gets very angry about and threatens to close the Ghostbusters down.
This is another thing that Dan will really hate. Oh, it's a guy from a thing you remember.
Yes. God.
Dan likes this film.
Really?
Yeah,
surprised. Mm. Well, good for you, Dan.
Well, like might be a strong word.
Relatively.
But he didn't hate it.
He preferred it to Afterlife.
Yes.
Yeah. So Spengler Jr. is upset because she can't work for the Ghostbusters. Finn Wolfhard, who has absolutely nothing to do in the entire film, his entire character arc is he wants to get to drive the Ectomobile. And Paul Rudd is struggling to enter a existing family unit as a father figure to the two children. So while all this is going on, Ray, from the original Ghostbusters, Dan Aykroyd, is now running a shop for paranormal and occult items and has a podcast where people can come in and have their items
appraised.
Everyone
has a bloody podcast.
Camille Nanjiani as a new character who definitely isn't in a role that was originally offered to Rick Moranis. Turns up with some old ball that his grandmother used to keep in a dungeon that is inhabited with a ghost that, if unleashed, will freeze the world, hence Frozen Empire. God, what else is going on? Winston Zeddemore's a bit worried about being old. Bill Murray's worried about the minimum amount of screen time he can make for a paycheck. It's just so overstuffed. You've got all the characters from Afterlife, including the characters who have no reason to be in New York. So like a character called Podcast and another character, I think, called Kim, who are just interning in New York for the summer for no reason, then they need to be in the film. You've got the original Ghostbusters and Janine's secretary all in there with a fairly sizable role for Dan Aykroyd, actually, who's in it a lot more, as is Winston. I mean, in the last one, they just appeared in a tiny cameo at the end.
Is this not a good thing?
Well, the problem is you've got all those, and then you've got three new characters. James Acaster turns up as like a Ghostbustery Q type figure.
Gadgets.
Gadgety type man, yes. And then Oswald Patton, I think it is. The stand up appears in like an extended role.
Patton Oswald.
And it's just so overstuffed. They've just had to put every character in there, and only a couple of them have anything whatsoever to do. McKenna Grace is great in it, who is Callie Spengler, I think. Is it the granddaughter? There's just so many characters. So she's Egon's granddaughter, and she kind of has a almost quasi-romantic relationship with a ghost called Melody, who died in a fire.
It's like season 5 of Grey's Anatomy.
I will assume so.
There'll be some people who be like, yes, Hazel, I totally understand that. Izzy has sex with a ghost.
Oh. Well, they don't quite get to have ghost sex, but, you know, it turns out there may be an ulterior motive behind this relationship, I think.
Does it turn into a brain tumour?
No.
Okay.
Not the same.
Not the same.
Yeah, there's a plot of sorts, but it kind of just moves from set piece to set piece. And then the last 20 minutes is some really, really good effects. Did you know that if you form a family, whether it's a real family or just a family of friends, and if you band together as a family, you can overcome almost anything?
Wow, no film has ever tried to make that point before.
Literally, there's a bit where they're firing the proton blaster thing, and all the family have to hold it together and cuddle each other to aim it in the right place, because together they're not quite strong enough. But
yeah, wasn't there something like that just at the end of the first movie as well?
No, they crossed the street.
You mean Afterlife rather than the first movie?
Yeah.
It's not funny. Ghostbusters is supposed to be a comedy, and it's somehow now it's just like a family drama. There's none of the funniness or the quips or lines. Bill Murray just looks like, I've never seen a man so uninterested in his entire life.
Not since the last Bill Murray film.
And the one before. Mm.
Didn't we cancel Bill Murray a couple of years ago and then forgot that we'd cancelled him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It never quite came out exactly what happened.
He said he did something that he thought was funny, but the other person didn't.
The entire career.
I mean, that's my life.
So, I think the obvious question is, why are you talking about this on the podcast, John?
I feel the need to warn others. I didn't actively hate it. I was just bored. And I was sad because I loved the original so much.
That sounds...
Maybe the problem is you.
Maybe.
Mm. I don't think so.
Maybe we'd gone together as a family unit and hugged each other whilst watching the film. We'd have been strong enough to get through it.
So, did you feel the same about Ghostbusters 2?
I like Ghostbusters 2.
Why am I dripping with goo?
Mm-hmm. It's not Ghostbusters, but it's fun. It's a comedy, at least.
It sounds like a really bad example of franchise syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Batmanitis.
Yeah, we own a property that people feel good towards because of the first film. Yeah. Let's just churn some shit out and then make more and more, because people like John will go see it anyway.
I don't think it's made a lot of money.
It's not done brilliantly. No. I mean, it was quite cheap to make, I think.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was...
Bill Murray's in it.
I think it was $100 million, which for blockbustery films these days isn't an awful lot.
That's too low.
Your nephew gave it 10 out of 10.
He gave it 10 out of 10, yeah. But we're taking him to a doctor just to check. He said it was the best film ever, but he's 8, so... And if I was 8...
You'd almost prefer if it was kind of actively bad, because that might imply that at least they've tried some bold swings and they just didn't work for you.
Like
I hate Poor Things, but I have to admit that they've captured something there. They've really tried something. It's not for me, but it's a thing. And it sounds
big
like Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, is it called?
I've
forgotten already. It just sounds like it's just...
They've thrown spaghetti at a wall, and some of it might stick, but here's a lot of things.
They're utilising a name rather than trying to actually create any kind of artistic endeavour.
You feel like it's a film that nobody cared about when they made it. It's got a real just kind of slapdash, this'll do. Here's a thing you remember, here's another thing you remember. Oh, little mini marshmallow man back, Slimer's back.
I know him. That
kind of... It sounds more like just a huge checklist of things that they had to have, and that's exactly the problem.
So Kumail Nanjiani is the fire master who can do things with fire because his grandma could. And then there's a bit where a big he can make flames move.
I can do that.
Yeah, you just blow. Yeah, but there's a bit where the big bad appears in like the last 20 minutes and he's going around going to random people, are you the fire master? You go, yeah, you're just doing the same fucking thing again.
Yep.
Oh.
Yep. That sounds really frustrating. I'm not going to watch this.
No.
Well, we look forward to your review of Godzilla Kong.
Yes.
Jesus. Oh, they've renewed Monarch for
Monarch
a second
two,
series.
Yeah.
I am not pleased about that.
Why?
Because the first series was bad.
No, it wasn't.
It started really well, and then it just didn't do anything, and no, thank you.
Why is it people never seem to learn and fix the mistakes they made the first time around by the second
Money.
Season?
Yeah. Was it 10 episodes of Monarch?
Yeah.
You probably could take...
Felt like more.
You probably could take episodes 3 to 8 and just cut them out completely, and there's so much plate spinning in the middle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
100%.
And trying to avoid needing Godzilla effects.
Yeah.
The bit in the first episode, they reused about 5 times by the end.
Yeah.
She kept having flashbacks to
see
the
same shot.
Thing.
Yeah.
I liked it. Screw you guys.
Yeah, I will say McKenna Grace was really good in it. And had the film been entirely about her and her story, it would be a much better film without all this random crap shoved in it.
Cool.
Cool.
How many pieces of random crap out of 10?
How many unwanted sequels?
How many handfuls of shit thrown at a wall?
4.
Oh, harsh.
Scathing.
Sounds generous.
When I came out, I was like, it was all right. And then the kind of the more I thought about it, the angrier I got.
Louise fell asleep for
a big chunk in the middle, yeah.
Louise is the wisest.
Did he go with your nephew?
No, he's been to see it twice, though.
You have to protect him from himself.
Have to. When I was his age, I'd watched RoboCop, so I think I might just put that on for him and...
Yeah, look what happened.
Traumatise him for life. We also went to see the original Godzilla last week.
Yes.
I'm just looking at Andy's t-shirt. And that was brilliant. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it held up more than I thought it would. This was awesome. The Japanese version, not the American edition, where they replace a load of the Japanese parts with English people. With American people, rather.
Yeah. Which is the version most people, I think, saw on TV for decades, where they had Raymond Burr, just as an American reporter in Japan. And all the characterization, all the bits that weren't the giant stomping monster, they just replaced with Raymond Burr with a macaron. My God, Godzilla is coming! Which you don't want. It's a little pent up.
Radioactive sperm.
Yeah. Thousands of years worth of radioactive jizz.
No wonder he's angry.
That is all for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back to haunt your ear holes in a few weeks' time. Until then, tally up the effort that it will take you to leave a review with this promise of a reward from John.
If you leave us a review, I will take you to the pub, join a Leeds United game, and ignore you for 90 minutes while I shout at millionaires for not being quite as good as they should be at doing something that is far, far above my skill level.
Definitely worth the effort. Yeah. Until next time, you've been listening to...
A man who's worried his dog is playing a long con on him.
A man who is waiting for the aliens to come, but not Godzilla.
A man who can't wait to see the non-porno version of Three Body Problem.
A man whose inner child is very happy right now.
And a woman who has a question for the listeners. If you had to steal the identity of one of these nerds, which one would you choose? None of them? Yeah, I thought so. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you have an inner child. Have you thought about letting him out?
No.
Oh, kid.
He knows what he did.